Welcome to Bread for the Head on the UK Health Radio Network. I'm your host, Mark Sefton. If you work in the health industry, you spend your entire life taking care of everyone else. But what are you feeding your own mind? Every week on this show, we are breaking bread on the thoughts, the ideas, and the habits that shape our inner world. It is time to stop running on empty and start intentionally nourishing your mind so you can stay healthy, resilient, and inspired. Both inside and out. Pull up a chair and let's go and eat. Welcome back to the Bread for the Head radio show. Really excited to be here on the UK Health Radio Network. And I'm your host, Mark Sefton. Today, we are going to take a deep dive into what happens when our mental energy runs completely dry and how simplifying our mindset can rewrite our entire lives. My guest today is Bronwyn Shortino, an international author, simplicity expert, and founder of Chic Life. After pushing herself through 2 decades of corporate pressure on 2 hours of sleep at night, her world shattered, facing her to ask the fundamental question, what if there is a better way to live? Now she teaches people around the world how to step away from that mental overwhelm, trust their inner voice, and nourish their minds. Bronwyn, welcome to Bread for the Head.
Hi, Mark. I am so pleased to be here. I love that we've got the opportunity to have this chat, and I can't wait to see the tangents that we go on with our conversation.
Yeah, because we've had conversations before, and they were really quite emotional and quite beautiful. And I think because we've got more time as well to go a little deeper, I think everybody's in for a treat today.
I think so too.
Now, because this show is new, Bread for the Head, I've obviously talked a little bit on other shows of what that means and what the premise of this show is. But I think I really like the idea of kind of asking you, when you hear the words Bread for the Head, what do you think of? What do you believe that it means? What does it mean to you?
Well, I think that bread is such a life force. It's one of the basic staples of life. If you go to every culture around the world, they'll have some form of bread as a part of their staple food. And I think there's something really simple and nourishing about bread when you really strip it back to the basic ingredients and you make it in the simplest way possible and infuse it with love. And I think when you then imply that, you know, the simplest ingredients, make it with the simplest ingredients possible, infuse it with love, and then apply that to your head and your mental health and the perspectives in life, the way you move through life, the things that you think about in life, the way you talk to self about in life. I just think that it gives you the opportunity to just open up such a huge conversation around the simple ways that you can do things really differently to make a significant change in life.
Yeah, so like when you go to certain restaurants, they'll always have like bread for the table, won't they, with a selection of dips like balsamic vinegar or olive oil. And it is that staple. It's your bread and butter. It's your, you know, it's something that we are all familiar with. And I love the fact that regardless of what country you're from, everybody knows what bread is.
Yeah, I agree. And also when you look at it with commercialization and the way that it's gone down a track of being full of stuff that's not good for us and that really impacts in our body and all of those sorts of things, you can actually see the way that even though it is a staple in life, it has also become something that's not necessarily as nourishing as it could be. And so I think, you know, with the bread for the head, there's so many things in life that really impact our ability to, you know, just live in a thriving way every day. And so for me, it's just that message of let's get back to the simplest, easiest, most nourishing way that we can actually create the staples in life.
Yeah. I'm on the UK Health Network. So for me, when I came up with the idea of Bread for the Head, it was very much with the premise as to what are you feeding your mind, you know, and for me, I've always been fascinated by mind obesity. We focus a lot on obesity of the body when we're filling it poor nutrition, high in sugar, high in fat, you know, and then we end up with like a big large body. And I think the same for the head. It's like, what are you feeding your mind? You know, are you walking around with a fat head? Are you walking around with a very lean, athletic, flexible, you know, mind that's durable, that's responsive? And I think for me, this is where my passion has come from, in wanting to create a show where we're talking about the impacts of the mind. We're talking about how do we put our mind in a place of health and flexibility. So based on that, does that bring anything else to you, Bronwyn?
Yeah. So as you're thinking, I'm going down the pathway of, you can have the most incredible nourishing ingredients in terms of food in front of you, but if your mind is actually in a toxic place with toxic people, with toxic environments, then the way that you actually consume the food will be changed and will be turned to toxic. So the power of the mind is just so extraordinary, and it's one of the things that we ignore the most, because it's not seen as anything other than woo-woo. The second that we go and we start to think about the mind, people just think that you're automatically talking spiritual, and the spiritual therefore has no connection to anything, because you can't have body-mind-spirit connection. You can only have body or mind or spirit. So I think it's really time to get a bit rebellious and, you know, I like to say put all the options back on the table and then go towards the ones that are really attractive to you. And what you'll find is it's the combination of things that you're drawn to that will create that, you know, holistic pathway for you. So, you know, the mind plays such a strong role in how we do things. Our thoughts create our choices, and our choices go together to create our life. So if we're not really conscious and really connected about what we're thinking, then we're just on autopilot and we're actually just ticking boxes in someone else's agenda. So, you know, that lean mind and that conscious mind and the connected mind is so important in how we actually live our lives.
Yeah, when I think of the mind, because people often say, you know, how do you affect the mind? And, you know, how do you work it out? How do you exercise it? And I always think about the senses. It's always about the senses for me that then determine when it goes into my head, into my brain, into my mind. It's what am I looking at and what am I listening to? You know, and for me, this is really the key in terms of when we're talking about what we feed in our minds. It's really about, what are we looking at? What are we listening to? What are we experiencing and touching? You know, these are the things that I think have the biggest impact.
Yeah. Well, it's all consumption, right?
Yeah.
So we talk about consumption from the point of view of what we put over our lips and into our body from a food perspective. But consumption is actually absolutely everything that we absorb. So it's what we watch. You know, if you're watching something that's really violent on TV all the time, then you've got violence that you're consuming. If you are, you know, consuming really toxic food, whether it's, you know, deep fried or high sugar or, you know, all of those sorts of things, then you've got toxicity going into your system. If you're constantly listening to people that are arguing, fighting, putting people down, like if you sit in their environment constantly, then you are consuming that and it's going into your system, and it affects us on a cellular level and we don't realize that. So every time our cells replicate, which is every 90 days, we're actually replicating those cells based on the environment that we're sitting in and what we're consuming. So, you know, we consume on a holistic level and we forget that we have to nourish ourselves on a holistic level. So if we want to be healthy, if we want to be happy, if we want to be successful, if we want to be all these things, then we have to be really, really strong and conscious in what we're consuming and what we're allowing around ourselves. And sometimes that means, you know, that you go to dinner and somebody across the table starts, you know, talking to you about their latest passion project. And, you know, it might be, I had this example the other night where I didn't agree with them. I didn't disagree with them, but I didn't know enough about the situation to actually hold an opinion. Highly complex situation. There's no clear answers. You know, globally, everybody is struggling with this particular issue. And my response was that I can see that there are so many different perspectives depending on who you are in this situation. I don't know what the clear pathway is, and I'm not prepared to put my energy to it because I don't know what the answer is. So where I'm sitting on this topic is I just wish ease and grace and love for everyone because I'm not adding my energy to something I don't fully understand and that there's no clear pathway and I don't have a solution to. So I would rather step out of that and say, no, ease, grace and love to everyone than to add energy to a situation which could inadvertently fuel something that it is completely against who I am. And it didn't go down well. It wasn't well accepted because I didn't take the party line. And in fact, dinner was dismissed. Dinner was ended and it's let's go home now. And I came home feeling like initially I'd upset someone again and I'd done all these things. But fairly quickly, I sort of jumped onto the thoughts in my mind and just said, no, I stood in my truth and didn't want to add to a situation that I don't know enough about. So that consumption and how we actually operate in the world is so important that we're so connected and so consciously connected and aware with who we are and what our thoughts are and what we're actually putting out into the world.
Yes, it's always interesting when, especially I believe that me and you are similar in the sense of we take a lot of pleasure but practice it in reflection, able to reflect on an event or a situation and really hone into ourselves. I'm a big believer in being true to ourselves in order for us to be true to others and true to the way that we show up. But it really comes from honoring ourselves, honoring how we feel, our own experience in order to be able to navigate through this life. I mean, none of us should ever abandon ourselves for the good of someone else.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the second important part of that is allowing others to do the same. And I think that's where, as a society, where we let ourselves down at the moment is, you know, that situation I was in, there was no ease and grace given to me for my opinion and you know, how I was approaching it. But I gave complete ease and grace to the other person for where they were sitting with it. And I think, you know, it's one thing to say we should be authentic, we shouldn't abandon ourselves and all of those sorts of things, but we also then have to allow others to sit in that place and for all of us to be okay in that space.
That's a really interesting point. I think that I'm probably quite good at the first part of that, probably not as conscious about the second. And how interesting it is when somebody picks themselves over you, we can all have a sense of feeling rejected. But that's actually not the case. It's more the fact that they are needing to take, you know, care of themselves, which obviously, you know, we all need to do that. But I think that's really a beautiful, you've given me something to really like chew on as well. So I love, that's one of the things that I love about our conversation is the fact that you also give something for me to chew the fat on, even though I'm the one that's asking the questions. I love that. Now, I mentioned in your intro about you living, you know, off 2 hours of sleep and, you know, in your previous corporate career, yeah, you only functioned on 2 hours of sleep a night, believing you had to do everything for everyone else. What kind of negative mental self-talk or beliefs, Bronwyn, do you feel were feeding that constant drive to overperform?
I had a very active and vicious inner voice. And there was nothing that I did ever in any millimeter of my life that was good enough. I worried constantly about whether, you know, a meeting that I'd had was taken in the vein that I had approached it with. I worried whether or not somebody had gone home and was talking about me and saying, you know, that I hadn't had, you know, handled a meeting well. I wondered all the time whether or not people were saying, you know, she's doing a terrible job. I haven't looked after my people well enough. Haven't looked after my family well enough. I'm not fit enough. I'm not fast enough. I'm not intelligent enough. And not enough really drove my life constantly. And I spent all day, every day, looking after everybody else, chasing after everybody else, making sure that they were okay. I would come home via the gym, and I would punish myself at the gym because I wasn't good enough and all of these things. Then I would come home, make dinner, sit down. Then I would get into my work for the day that hadn't been done because I was running around after everybody else. And I would fall asleep, go into bed absolutely exhausted, and I'd fall asleep, and I'd be asleep really fitfully for about 2 hours, and then I'd be awake. And then I'd be going over everything again. The alarm would go off in the morning, and my first thought was, it cannot possibly be time to get up. I haven't slept. And then it would be, if I just get up and get to the shower, it will be okay. And then out of the shower, it's like, if I can just get to breakfast, it will be okay. And then if I can just get to the office, it will be okay. And then the pattern would just repeat itself. So I spent my life in this really toxic space where there was nothing good ever happened. And if something good happened, I won a really big award here in Australia. And when my name was announced, I was happy for about 5 seconds, and then it was flooded with some, I'm going to get on stage and someone's going to say, wait, there's a mistake. Somebody would stand up and go, this is imposter. You know, so it was like there was never a moment where if something good happened, it lasted. I found a way internally with my voice to turn it into something that was, you know, riddled with fear and, you know, worry that somebody would be able to prove that I wasn't perfect.
Mm. I need to ask you about, because you said, you know, you were fueled by not feeling good enough.
Yeah.
Where did that come from, Bronwyn? Where it's there's almost, it almost seemed like quite a bit of self-hate, if I'm honest.
No, that I hated myself. I just think I was really hard on myself, and okay. I forced myself to keep going, and I forced myself to push through, and I forced myself to be of service to everybody else. And I think there's this huge part of me that's about service. There's this huge part that wants to give and wants to really, you know, help ease the pain of the world. And that part just took over. And whatever I was doing, if it didn't achieve that, then, you know, there was problems. And I think the biggest issue was that I'd ended up in an industry that was completely at odds with who I am. It didn't align to my values, didn't align to what was important to me. But I was there, and I really wanted to help, and I wanted to make a difference, and I wanted to change the way the industry operated and all of those things. Not really understanding that as one person, you can't really do that from the inside of that. You have to actually step outside and go into the world in a broader sense and really help people to realign with who they are, reconnect with who they are, and then move forward in a different way.
Yeah. And in terms of that not feeling good enough, can you pinpoint where that was come from?
I just think that perfectionism runs deep in who I am, in my DNA. And I still live with it every day. It's not like it's gone. It's just I dance with it differently, and I'm more conscious of it.
Okay. Because if I reflect on myself, when I've had like, when I was like bereft of like confidence, and now you wouldn't know because people always say, Matt, you're so confident. And for me, it's the fact that the reason I'm confident is because I stay in my lane. I know what I'm good at. I know what excites me. And if I stay in those things, then you see a confident mark. If you put me on a paddle board, which is something that I'm enjoying and I'm improving, but I'm not like super confident, you know, then you get a different like version of me. And, you know, some of that has been from my childhood when I was bullied as a kid. And so, you know, back then my lack of confidence came from being bullied, not feeling good enough based on the fact that I wasn't always the popular one, you know, at school. And so that I understand like why then I lack confidence. And I was just fascinated because when somebody says that, you know, they never felt like good enough, for me, I'm always curious as to where that comes from. But it sounds like you didn't necessarily have a specific, which I find quite interesting.
I just think generally I never felt like I fit in.
Right.
I was never the one that just ran along after everybody else and it was all okay. If there was an issue, then I would stand up and I would, it's not okay. And that didn't necessarily win me any friends.
Yeah.
You know, I actually found my comfort in nature and in animals.
Mm.
So a lot of my time I spent with animals, and I still do. I have a very strong connection with animals and sort of the of nature. And I still have like that example with dinner the other night, you know, that I don't really fit in. I'm not prepared to just go along to keep the peace. I want to stand against who I'm, you know, not against, but within who I am and strongly aligned with who I am. And I've always been that way. I think I'm just a lot more conscious about it now, about what I'm choosing and what I'm doing. But I think because I didn't fit in, there was this perfection that fueled underneath that said, you're not safe, you know. And even though I was standing in the truth of who I was, at a young age, when you've got everybody else, you know, that kind of goes against you because of that, I think that can be really tough if you don't really mentally understand the importance of, you know, making your own choices and being true to who you are. And then that second part of allowing everybody else to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. And not, it's like you said, not everybody thinks about that. They just sort of think, you know, I'm going to do whatever I want. And that means that I can say whatever I want. And it's like, well, there's still the need for kindness and compassion and empathy and allowing people their journey. I can often see quite quickly the results of a situation or the pathway for a situation, and I can share that. But if somebody else doesn't see it at the same speed that I do, it's not my job to grab them by the neck and pull them along more quickly. It's actually to allow them to walk their pathway at the speed that they choose and have self-determination for their life. And I think that's the thing that's missing, is that people just go, well, no, you're wrong. I can see this and you have to come there now. And it's like, but they forget that there's steps that person has to go through to learn the things they're here to learn before they can actually understand what you're saying to them.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
The station that makes you feel good.
When your body finally forced you to stop, Bronwyn, and your cognitive process temporarily shut down from sheer shock and overload, how does that chronic mental exhaustion quietly then begin to strip away your ability or our ability to make, you know, those clear, sound choices long before a physical breakdown happens?
Yeah, I think for me, the biggest thing was that the thing I remember the most about the time before my breakdown was the number of times that I had the thought it would just be easier to go into a mental health clinic, sit on a banana lounge and just be drugged. That was my repeating thought for months before I had that moment where I broke. And I didn't have the mental capacity at the time or the understanding or the connection with myself to know that that alone is a really serious signal to stop, assess, and make some changes. And I think we're taught to power through life. We're taught to soldier on. We're taught to just force ourselves to keep going. And there's this denial within ourselves that, we get to a point in life where we're successful and we suddenly start to think, well, I can't change course now because I'm here. And I remember, being told as a young female that the pinnacle, the success, is getting board positions. And I got there at a really young age, and I'm sitting in the room on a number of boards, and I was just treated like the note taker, the secretary, the person, you're here, you're our token female, and you get to do all the work. And I was like, I had the knowledge, I had the wisdom, I had the experience, but it was all about, well, we just have to tick a box and say we've got females on the board. Mm. And you're here so you can just do everything for us. And then you'd do the work, and then you'd have these sort of older male board members who'd just go, well, it's all well and good, but, reality is if we actually get into that situation, we're never going to use that documents. We're just going to fly by the seat of our pants. And I'm sitting there going, well, you look at the liability that you have as an individual director, and you've got that attitude on the board, and I'm doing all the work here, and you just turn up once a month for a board meeting, and you have no intention of actually utilizing the work that's being done. And I remember looking around the room and just going, is this it? This is supposed to be the pinnacle. This is what I've been told that I have slogged my way through life for, and this is it. And I was sitting there and I was just going, I'm wasting my time here. I lived in a world where every second was triple scheduled, and here I am out of hours at a board meeting on a weeknight experiencing this. And I was just sitting there going, how many of us, like now after my breakdown, I can see so much clarity, how much time I wasted and how far I pushed myself when I really didn't need to. And the big question is, how much time do we waste, and how many of us are actually stuck in this mindset? I've ticked all the boxes, I'm here, and I have to keep going because I've got this facade to hold up.
It's interesting, isn't it, when we go through something that completely kippers us, and we have that perspective, and kind of, they always say that you should only look back to be able to see where you've come from. But I always find it really humbling as well to be able to look back how we ended up in that breakdown, that overwhelm. What was the events that led up to that? And then being able to educate other people and help people, jump off that before they end up, with a crash. I think that's really important that in life, when we go through difficulty and challenge, we're able to then help other people like limit that.
Yeah. And I think one of the big things I've learned, and one of the big things I see now with everybody that I work with, is this, absolute terror of change. And we think that we have to throw everything out and start from scratch to be able to do things differently. And my experience taught me that, 80% of who I was actually really strong and really working for me. Mm. 10% needed a few tweaks, and then it was good to come in as part of that, add to that 80%. And there was 10% that was just toxic and was running the show and had the loudest voice and just needed to go. So it was 10% of who I was and what I was doing that really needed to leave. And the other 90% really was working for me and didn't need a lot of change. Mm. So I think when we look at it like that, we don't have to be anywhere near as afraid of it as we think we do. Something I learned when I broke, I couldn't cope with anything other than the basics in life. So money didn't matter. The expensive ingredients for food didn't matter. Expensive suburb, expensive cars, none of it mattered. The only thing that really mattered was, the question, do you want to live or do you want to die? That really is the question that goes in your mind. And if you choose to live, or when you choose to live, you then get the choice to actually decide how you're going to live from that point onwards. And what I learned was it wasn't the cancer that, dropped me and created this massive, a tsunami, I guess, in my life. it was the tiny little choices that I'd made that all went together, the thousands, the hundreds and thousands of them that combined together to take me to where I got to. And so if it's the tiny little choices that make all the difference, then I get really conscious and really deliberate about the tiny little choices in my life now. And that is how I live differently, not making massive big decisions that upheave life and do things differently. And tomorrow I'm going to do a completely different job and all of that sort of stuff. It's literally the tiny little choices. Do I eat lunch at my desk? Do I go for a walk outside for 5 minutes? Do I do some Qigong? Do I choose the takeaway on the way home, or do I create something that's more nourishing at home that takes 5 minutes? They're the tiny choices. Who do I have in my life? Am I going to answer that phone call from that toxic person, or am I going to spend 5 minutes on myself doing something that nourishes me? They're tiny. They're so little, but so many of them go together to really create the way we move forward.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there. It's mind-blowing to think that on average we make 30,000 choices every day. I mean, That's a heck of a lot of choices.
Yeah.
And most of us are probably, even the ones that are conscious, we're probably not as detailed as that. But that's really interesting that you're acknowledging that it's the tiny choices, not so much the big surmountable, what we deem as the most life-changing, that really have the biggest impact. But it's the small everyday choices that compounded over time are what really creates, I guess, the destination, of where we end up.
Yeah. And I think if you really break it down, it comes down to, are you going to do what you're told and tick boxes on someone else's agenda, or are you going to make the choices that are right for you right here, right now?
Yeah. Now, I know that you talk a lot about finding joy in deliberately pulling the thread on a thought to really unravel where it comes from. How can someone who is maybe feeling overwhelmed, stressed out, start observing their thoughts instead of being controlled by them? Because we're obviously talking about making these conscious thought choices. How do we work on that?
I think the first thing that I would suggest to someone that's really overwhelmed, and don't get me wrong, I still get really overwhelmed with different things in life. I just deal with it differently now, because life is huge, life is big, and life will throw us challenges and curveballs no matter where we're at in life, no matter how much work we've done on ourselves. So don't think for a second that the overwhelm goes. It's about how you deal with it. So the first thing to understand when you're overwhelmed is that you have a choice. You can either sit in the spiral and you can let the overwhelm feed through your body, through your cells, through your energy, or you can make the choice to get up, move the energy in your body. So go outside, get into the fresh air. Go and stand next to a tree or a green plant of some sort. Do something with your mind. So give your mind something that it needs, like break the pattern. It might be that you want to go and put some soothing music on. It might be that you want to go and listen to death metal. Like, it just depends on who you are, because we're all different, right? Like, if I put death metal on, it would just rev me up so much and make me angry. But some people, it's really calming for them. So if that's you, go put your death metal on. But break the pattern. Don't just sit in the overwhelm and let it take over. And the other thing I learned from somebody that's amazing is we have a gamut of emotion that we can experience. There's not just sadness and joy. They're not the only two emotions. We have so many emotions that are available to us. And those emotions give us the ability to actually understand contrast in life. If we didn't have anger, we wouldn't understand joy. If we didn't have hate, we wouldn't understand love, right? So we need the contrast in life to understand when we're seeing, the differences. But when you're in a situation where you're overwhelmed, you can feel anxiety, you can feel, pressure, you can feel the stress, you can feel your heart rate increasing, all of those sorts of things, right? One of the most powerful things you can do is say, I recognize the emotion of anxiety, for example, but I am not anxiety. So I recognize that anxiety is present right now. I recognize the emotion, but I am not the emotion. So you allow yourself to experience it. There is no good or bad. There's just emotion. So you allow yourself to experience it in the moment. And then you just say, I am not the emotion. And then you can actually separate yourself from the emotion. And so often that's easier than to be able to see the facts of the situation and also to allow yourself to find other perspectives of ways you can look at the situation. And in that space, it's really easy to then say, what's one thing I can do right now to move myself out of this overwhelm or out of this anxiety? What's one thing I can do right now, one tiny little step, one tiny little choice that I can make for me to experience this differently right now? Because I think we spend a lot of time either in the past, what did I do? How did I do it? Was it okay? Is someone upset with me? Or we're worried about what's coming in the future. And actually, the past is gone. You can't do anything about it. The future hasn't come yet. And actually, quietly, tomorrow becomes today. So tomorrow actually never comes. So all we've got in a real space for us to experience is right now. So the tiny choices that we make right now will determine how we experience tomorrow when it comes, when it becomes today.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
The thing I like about you is you really get people, you do get us to think and like see things. I like that you, because there's always two faces to every coin. And I think we're really good at, you know, focus on one side, but maybe not the other. And I think that that's one of the benefits that really comes through when me and you have conversation is you bring us back to a place where we can sit. And we can observe and acknowledge our emotion without, as you said, believing that we are anxiety. You know, I think it's different, isn't it, that you can do something and it doesn't mean you are it. Like you can spill a glass of water and it doesn't mean that you're clumsy. And sometimes I think we get
caught.
Or an
idiot.
Yeah, exactly. And yet we've all knocked over a glass of water. I can't believe that there's nobody on planet Earth that's not done that.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, you could berate yourself and say, oh, you know, you're an idiot, you're clumsy. But actually, it isn't the case. And I think that self-talk, that understanding of observing and not being your thoughts or not being your emotions, I think is really an important, like, thing to say.
Yeah. And it's interesting, often when I work with females in executive coaching, one of the things that we end up talking about is just get conscious about how often you apologize for things that you don't need to apologize for. And I had one woman that I was working with that came to the session the following week and said, every single time I walked down the corridor at work, I apologized. She said, oh, I'm sorry, when somebody else was in the corridor at the same time. She's like, why did I need to do that? Why do I have to be sorry that I'm in the corridor at the same time as somebody else? And that way that we speak to ourselves and then present that in the world is extraordinary. And I'm really interested that you talked about the dropping the glass, because I wrote about that very scenario in my first book, Keep It Super Simple. And the way that I, you know, one of the things that happened was I lost my dexterity. So I would pick up a glass and my hand would just let go. And the glass was, you know, it's a $2 glass from somewhere, dropped on the kitchen floor. And then I was, oh, you're useless, you're clumsy, you're an idiot. You're the stream of, you know, horrible talk that came my way from myself was extraordinary. And it's one of the things that I had to learn was to really pick up on that and just go, no, actually the facts are that it's a really inexpensive glass. It's easily cleaned up. Actually, none of those other things apply. So it's really that self-talk is something that, you know, if you are your own harshest critic, really start to hone in and tune in to what you're saying to yourself, because if you can become your greatest cheerleader, your experience of life and how you walk through life changes exponentially.
Definitely. It's interesting you picked up on your book, because it's almost like you saw my notes, because that was very where I was heading with KISS, Keep It Super Simple. And it's interesting because my grandmother, obviously the acronym that other people know KISS for is Keep It Simple Stupid, right? But you've obviously like changed that. And I remember when my gran used to say that to me, and I remember at her eulogy when she died, and I was sharing the eulogy about her, and I used this acronym as well for KISS. But I said, you know, my grandmother used to say keep it simple stupid, and I said I changed it to Keep It Simple Sefton, because it landed a lot nicer for me. But yeah. your book is called Keep It Super Simple. But so many people, I think, feed their minds complex scenarios, worst case outcomes, and overthinking that I think we're probably all guilty of. How can we start to train our brain to default to simplicity instead of that complexity that we all seem to kind of go down?
Well, I think as humans, we have an extraordinary ability to make things complex when simplicity will do. And I think there's a number of things that feed into that. You know, if you think about the messaging in life wasn't meant to be easy. You have to save for a rainy day. You know, you have to work hard to get ahead. And if you happen to find a way to do anything that is simple, then you must be doing it wrong. That's just how we're taught. Socially, we're brought up that way. We're, you know, we get it into our belief system without even really knowing that it's there. So if things are going really well and life is really easy, then you start to look around with what am I doing wrong? When actually the fastest way to a healthy, happy and successful life is to create the simplest and easiest pathway for yourself, filled with the things that are important for you and living in a way that just fully supports who you are and what you need. And I think this again, like I fully support going rogue. I just think the more we go rogue in life, the more we just, you know, we're that naughty little kid that runs off down the road when everyone says, no, you have to go that way. I just think when you can bring that joy into your life, that it makes all the difference. And it really is about just getting the courage up to do that one thing for yourself to start with. And then you start to understand just how important that is in how you do things and the way you move forward. And suddenly you just don't want to do life in any other way.
Very good. Now, you've deleted the word success and failure from your personal vocabulary and replaced them with adventure and explore. How does shifting that language in our heads relieve the intense pressure so many caregivers, empaths and leaders carry?
Yeah, for me, I noticed that when we're on holidays, you live in a very different way. So you you don't live by alarms. You are prepared to go and try different foods that you wouldn't necessarily try. You will go and do different activities and different touristy things and all of those sorts of things. And sometimes you land on something that's amazing and that you love and that you had the best time ever, or you know, you enjoyed the food in a way that you've never enjoyed them before. And other times you just go, well, that was really crack. That was terrible. I'd never do that again. But there's no pressure on that experience. You just, I would never do it again. Whereas when we live in our normal lives, when we're not on holidays, we do the success and failure thing. So we're not prepared to do, we're not prepared to try things. We're not prepared to do new things because everything's so visible now. And if you fail, then everybody sees you fail. And so for me, I just went, well, life is just so much easier when you're in that holiday mode. And it's all about adventure and explore. It's all about trying new things and it's all about having new experiences. And you don't rest your entire life on whether or not they work or not. Mm. And what I realized is that it's this good and bad that we're taught in life. You know, if we get it wrong, it's really bad. Whereas the way that I look at that now is if something doesn't work, so if you dip your toe in the water and it doesn't work for you, actually that is as amazing as if you dip your toe in the water and it does work for you, because you're getting a message and a signal really quickly that you don't need to keep going down that pathway. There's not, you know, not really anything else for you down there. Whereas when you get the signal for that really worked for you, keep going down that pathway and finding out what else is there for you. It's immediate feedback, and we don't see it that way. We see it as we failed or we succeeded. And so I just got rid of those words and just went, if I instead have adventure and explore, then I can still dip my toe in the water. I can still go down a pathway and celebrate if something doesn't work out just as much as if, and in fact, even more than if something does work. And I think this is where the joy in pulling the threads comes from for me. Oh, we spend so much of our lives trying to really tightly hold on to things so that things don't fall apart. Whereas I know that when you let things fall apart, the things that work for you come to the surface and you can more easily see them. So I want to pull the thread. I get joy out of pulling the thread because I know that there is just so much for me on the other side of that process. And I don't have as much stress and tension and pressure in my body from trying to hold on and make sure that nothing, you know, falls apart.
It's a bit like Jenga, I guess. It's like you actually enjoy pulling the brick that topples them.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you know you get to start again. You know you get to play the game again, right?
Yeah.
Whereas if you're just stuck in that same little who's gonna fail, who cares? Just pull it. Let it go. Rebuild.
I need to talk to you about this one topic before we end. And it always goes quick, I think, when me and you talk. I think, you know, we could do probably a marathon show for sure. But I want to speak a little bit about betraying self, because I think that this is something that I think is really important. And you've mentioned that so many people, you know, spend their days looking for someone else to tell them what to do because they don't trust themselves. What mindsets, you know, must we really let go of in order to rebuild that lost trust in our own inner voice? Because I think, you know, I even alluded to the fact that it's no good kind of abandoning yourself in order to please, you know, someone else if it comes at the detriment of us.
Yeah, so probably the best way to talk about that is to talk about what happened when I looked in the mirror for the first time after surgery. And I'm hoping you've got your tissues ready, Mark, because I know that you get upset with this. Yeah. So, you know, 4 days after surgery, I walked across the room and looked in the mirror for the first time with all the bandages and everything taken off. And a quarter of my head was missing in the reflection that looked back at me. And everyone around me was, you know, the surgeon was ecstatic because the skin graft was amazing. The nurse is like, all these stitches are all coming out beautifully. This is healing amazingly. You know, everyone's relieved because the surgery had gone well. And absolutely none of that meant anything to me, because all I could see was the monster in the mirror. And if in that moment the shock of that image really looked back at me, and I did not know who I was looking at. I was looking into the eyes of a complete stranger, and I suddenly couldn't, you know, cognitively process what people were saying to me. It's like my time where I was moving way more slowly, and everything was moving at speed around me. I could hear people talking to me, but I couldn't really understand what they were saying. And I think the biggest thing about all of that is that I didn't understand anything that I've just talked to you about. You know, and I remember driving home with my husband and saying, it's okay, you can leave me. I know I'm a monster and you don't have to live with this anymore, and all of that sort of stuff. And that inability to cope with anything other than the basics in life came from, I had no idea who I was. I had no idea what I needed. I had no idea how to move forward. Every single plan that we had in place had gone in that second, in that, you know, the mirror image, and in that moment. And I suddenly was in this space where I had, for the first time in my life, I had no idea where to turn and no idea how to solve the problem and fix the problem. And that was completely foreign to me, because I fixed everything. I fixed everyone's problems. I sorted everyone out. I made sure everyone was okay. But I suddenly didn't have that ability anymore, and I didn't know what my place in life was anymore, because I felt like I'd lost that. So that abandonment of self really happens with all the choices that you make. You know, when you're making choices that are all about everybody else and keeping everybody around you happy, and you're just saying yes to things because that's what everybody else wants you to do, you don't realize that every single tiny choice that you make takes you down a pathway where piece by piece by piece you are abandoning yourself. You're abandoning who you are, and you leave yourself with all these holes and all of these, you know, wounds almost, that you don't realize, because you just keep pushing through, you just keep going, you just keep forcing yourself. And along the way, there's this, you know, trail of pieces of yourself that go back, you know, decades. And, you know, when you go into that space where your body and your mind can't take it anymore, and they literally drop you and you can't get back up again, and you can't function, you can't do the things that you used to do, and you don't know what the way is forward, it's the tiny step and it's the tiny choice that actually takes you in a different direction. The most important part of that tiny choice and that tiny, you know, step is that you have the power to do that no matter where you're at in life. So if tiny choices get you to where you are, then tiny choices can get you out of that as well. You don't have to wait for the traumatic event. You don't have to wait for the excuse to be able to do things differently. You just have to consciously and deliberately make the tiny choice that is in your favor and that, you know, supports and nourishes you as the individual you are and the truth of who you are.
When I think of these tiny choices, Bronwyn, like, I'll share what I feel helps me in my tiny choices, and then I'd love for you to maybe share something that helps you. So I have three filters that I kind of live by that help me navigate the choices that I make. The first one I ask myself is, am I good at this? The second one is, does this excite me? Does this fuel me? Does this fulfill me? And then the third one is, does this take me to where it is that I want to go? So does it take me to the place, you know, when I think of legacy, when I think of when I draw my last breath, when I think about who do I want people to say Mark Sefton was? These are the three things that I ask myself when somebody propositions me, in particular in business, like with an opportunity. Does this excite me? Am I good at this? Does this take me to where I want to go? And I feel that those three really help in those tiny choices. Now for you, in your tiny choices, do you have something similar, different, or, you know, I would love to know, because I really feel that when we're having discussions like this, we don't want it just to tickle people's ears. We don't just want it to be that was a nice story, that was a nice podcast, because we live in a society now where there's knowledge overload. And for me, I want revelation, which is taking that knowledge and applying it in my life and then seeing the physical impact of that knowledge manifest, breathing, speaking. You know, for me, that's really what we want. So with that in mind, over to you on.
So I don't care if I'm good at something. I care about whether I love it.
Okay.
If I love this, if it lights me up, if the thought of doing this really just brings me joy, just the thought of it, let alone even doing it, then I know that there's something in it for me.
Okay.
I don't want to limit myself by needing to know if I'm good at it first. My ego loves the thought of people saying nice things about me when I die, but actually I'm a big believer that what someone else thinks is none of my business, because what they think is all through their filters, through their life experience, through their perspective, through a host of different things that have nothing to do with who I am, have nothing to do with the purpose and the approach that I bring to things. They could completely misconstrue. You know, I could step forward and say something and it could be completely misconstrued because they've got a life experience that tells them that X, Y, and Z could happen down that pathway. So one of the things that I've worked really hard on is to try and take my ego out of how I approach things. And really, if I just stand aligned with what brings me joy, you know, what can I unravel? What can I offload that isn't mine to carry, that isn't helping me, that's holding me back, that's weighing me down? And if I absolutely love doing something, that is where I approach things. Because I don't care if I'm not good at something, I just want to have a good time. I just want to be engaged. I want to be in situations where I'm getting energy back and not just giving all the time. I don't want to have to go into a situation where I'm giving the energy and then I have to spend hours refueling for me to be okay. So I'm always looking for the win-win in life. I'm looking for that situation which gives to others but feeds me as well.
Mm, love it. I do love the fact that, you know, I've interviewed over 5,500 people, and it's always the ones that actually make me think that I really enjoy. And you do this, and I love it, because I've taken notes, as I always do when I'm interviewing. So I always think, you know, I've got a great opportunity here to learn and to mull over and reflect. It definitely feels like that transition from performance into presence is really that what you're really saying, you know, which I find is another beautiful transition of life. Bronwyn, it's been so good to have you on this episode of Bread for the Head on the UK Health Network. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mark. I always love our conversations.
Yeah, me too. It's brilliant. Thank you.
You've been listening to Bread for the Head on the UK Health Radio Network with me, Mark Sefton. Thank you for taking the time to nourish your mind today. If this episode gave you some food for thought, please subscribe to the show on your favourite podcast app and hit follow on the UK Health Radio Network so you never miss an episode. Until next week, protect your peace, look after your inner world, and remember to keep feeding your head.